So I was reading an article earlier and I saw an interesting topic about a subject that I haven't really talked much about, and that is investing without, people, without active managers or without people in general. Whether you're a retail investor, just a normal person, or a fund manager, someone who's got a ton of money behind them, managing money for clients, it doesn't really matter. Maybe we won't have human investors in the future. And that is a possibility. And I want to give my opinion on this, but also, what I've seen from the article. And I'll link the article in the link below if you can find it. But there's kind of three main challengers to the human investor. And the most common one is the passive investing. And so you have all of these passively managed index funds. They're basically mutual funds that follow an index. They're low cost and you could trade them day to day. So you can't trade them very often, but you're supposed to hold these for a long time. And these usually outperform most active managers. And so that's the big reason why a lot of people buy into these passive index funds. And also with the ETFs, ETFs are pretty much, if you have like an S&P 500 ETF, it's kind of like a more liquid version of the index fund of the S&P 500, but you can trade it a lot more often throughout the day, like you could do with a stock. And so, a lot of people prefer ETFs over the actual index funds. But anyways, the whole passive investing movement kind of began in the 1970s. So that is when, the efficient market hypothesis guys came in, the Chicago School, and I guess the Austrian economists were saying that, basically the market's prices are all efficient. The price that they are at is the price that they are supposed to be at. And, you can't make money off of the markets because their prices are what they're supposed to be. And so if you make money, you're just lucky or something like that. And so basically, people started moving more and more towards the index funds of the S&P 500 because it's like, if you can't make money in the market, well then just buy everything. And so you have this passive investing thing. Where now many, many people are just buying the broad indexes like the S&P 500. And so you have the two main tools, which is the index mutual funds and the ETFs of whatever index you want to track. And now, the problem with these funds, and I've talked about the problems before, is that when too many people enter these funds, their price becomes kind of disconnected from the value, the actual value of these funds. And I think over the long term, most index funds probably outperform. And they do outperform actively managed funds. So, I guess if you don't know how to pick a good actively managed fund for the long term, because you have all these fees and expenses and whatnot, so that takes away a lot of the money from the funds, because after all of those, you're probably making less money than, the broad index funds. And so, on average, they outperform these mutual funds and whatnot. But when too many enter these, the price becomes disconnected from the value. So you have to kind of watch out because the, let's say the PE ratio of the S&P 500 is around 46.4. So that's a very, very high, PE ratio of the S&P 500. And, you know, the PE ratio only measures the price to the present day earnings. And so you don't factor in future earnings. Maybe everyone's super optimistic for a correct reason. And so the PE is very high. But I mean, I don't see a clear reason for this much optimism. And also we have interest rates so low, so that clearly makes sense as to why our PE on the S&P 500 is so high. But at the same time, there's this index called the Wilshire 5000 index. And this is a much more broad index of US companies. It's more broad than the S&P 500. And, you know, its PE is only around 24.925. So it has less 20 less PE, if that makes any sense. And so, I mean, not that many people buy into the Wilshire 5000 index, maybe for a good reason, maybe for not a good reason. Maybe you could argue that the companies inside of the S&P 500 are better, they're faster growing, or maybe it's momentum, maybe it's the fact that they actually got into the S&P 500 that makes them so good, and so they'll keep on growing kind of fast. That could be the case, but you know, the PE ratios of the two indexes are very, very different. And so maybe that is because so many people are into passive investing and the S&P 500 is such a popular index that, you know, it gets a little bit too, there's too much positive sentiment in the S&P 500 index that, you know, maybe the price is higher than the value is on the whole, you know, passive index itself, which is kind of ironic considering, you know, the efficient market hypothesis. But, you know, around 40% of all equity mutual fund money is in, you know, passive investment vehicles. So, I mean, that's a huge percentage of money in passive investing. So, I mean, is there maybe a bubble in passive investing? I mean, that's a pretty decent indication that there could be a bubble in passive investing. And, you know, another form of passive investing is the ETF, which has gained a lot of popularity in 2008 after the financial crisis. And, you know, I guess for some reason now, everyone wants passively managed funds that could be traded very quickly. And so, you know, some worry about the ETFs losing liquidity in recessions because, you know, everyone thinks it's a highly liquid, you know, asset. It's just a liquid index fund. But, you know, in during a recession, maybe it loses its liquidity. But, you know, in 2020, you know, the liquidity of ETFs as a whole, or maybe the S&P 500 ETF, was still quite high. So, I mean, maybe that's because we did so much QE. Maybe that's because interest rates came down so low that liquidity is so high everywhere. I mean, liquidity was pretty high everywhere. You know, banks have a ton of money. They have a ton of liquidity. They have a ton of cash. So, I mean, everyone's more indebted now. Everyone has more liquidity. So that could be the case. But, you know, what is next for ETFs? I'm not sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, passive investing is, I guess, the biggest challenger of active investing. And passive investing requires active investors at the end of the day, because for passive investing to for prices to be somewhat aligned to reality or to earnings, you have to have the market set the prices of every company. And for the whole efficient market hypothesis to work, it's based off of the premise that if everyone's analyzing companies and everyone's so smart, well then prices are set at a fair price. Pretty much all prices are set at a fair price. And so if no one's analyzing companies, well then prices go berserk. And so if you want even a somewhat efficient market that's not perfectly efficient like ours, you need active investors. You need people who analyze prices, who determine company values, valuations. And so you need active investors for passive investing and for even a decently efficient market. But of course, ours isn't. I mean, the more the central banks just add so much liquidity to our economy, lower interest rates and boost lending capabilities, and the market is now flying. Well, not really now, but once the market starts to fly, well then everything becomes super inefficient. We have a ton of zombie companies, and the whole crazy like Reddit crew, we get all of this. And so when you have a lot of central planning, the markets become less efficient. But the thing with the whole passive investing, I think this is mostly a problem regarding index funds, index ETFs, is that when people invest in, let's say, an S&P 500 index fund, right, and they the price of the S&P 500 index fund goes up, so now they think that I bought the S&P 500 and the price goes up, so this must be a great product, because now it's overperforming the mutual funds. So what do? Well, then people start to prefer passive investing over, personally picking stocks or letting mutual funds pick stocks. And they go in and buy these big indexes that, pushes the price of these indexes even higher. And then now they think that these indexes are even better, and they buy more of them and the prices go higher. Buy more of them, the prices go higher, so they think it's better and they buy more of them. And that's the whole theory of reflexivity. At least my understanding of how that would work, George Soros has I guess that's his famous theory, and I think that's kind of how the whole index investing is playing out so far, that it causes prices to disconnect from reality, from earnings, and eventually that doesn't lead up to a great place. But I guess the second challenger to active investors is the whole quantitative investing, where you have all these computers, algorithms, trading everywhere. And it's basically just computers replacing humans. Whereas the first option is more so like an index replacing individual stock picking and mutual fund picking. Now, this is just computers making trades and trades everywhere, which is quite different. And it really focuses on a short term, the market on a very short term. So, quantitative investing, you don't really have any long-term views. I mean, I doubt it really goes much further than a month. Now, I'm not familiar with quantitative investing much, but it's highly on the short term. So if you are investing in long term, then quantitative investing shouldn't really hurt you that much. But anyways, quantitative investing has two big factors, I guess. And one is, well, you're investing based off of factors, which is quite an interesting name. But you're finding securities, stocks, bonds, whatever, based on certain characteristics that you want. You could weigh the importance of each characteristic, use whatever percentage to weigh the importance of whatever characteristic and all. And so, you could pick by size, by value, by momentum, by whatever ratios. You could use PE ratio. It doesn't matter. And then your computer your computer does that. And then your computer assesses the risks given whatever way you make it do that. And it just buys whatever the best that the computer thinks is the best. And so, you're just letting your computer do everything. And, you could have positive results and you could have negative results. And I want to go over the second kind of big strategy that most of these quantitative investors use before I go, analyze the whole type of investing and how I think it corresponds with human investing. And so, there's also like statistical arbitrage where, these computers take a bunch of historical, events, so they take a lot of historical patterns. So, and they take all of these ratios. So for example, if you have a stock like Google, for example, and you have the NASDAQ composite. And so one day the NASDAQ composite goes up, but then the same day by 1%, let's say, and the same day that Google goes down by 1%. And these two are normally correlated. One goes up, the other goes up, but now one goes up and the other goes down. And so they have, a negative, correlation on that day. And so, usually they have, a correlation of one, but today it's negative one. And so what the whole quantitative investors, the whole computer algorithm could do is they could, buy up some Google and maybe short the NASDAQ composite. And, they'll make that little arbitrage money between the two. And that's, the whole mean diversion game. And so when you have no news on the 2 days, that's when it's really important. Because, if you have the NASDAQ go up by 1%, but you have Google fall by 5% because maybe, Google just got a lawsuit by the government for being a monopoly. Well, I guess Alphabet in that case, then, that makes sense. And so, the computer wouldn't do anything there because, there's a reason for Google or Alphabet, I guess, falling 5%. But if there's no important news and one differentiates from the other, then the computer will go in and start buying or selling certain companies and corresponding stocks or corresponding indices or whatnot. And they could also stock to stock like two similar companies. They could do, like a oil company and the price of oil. That makes a lot of sense. And it, again, it's short-term trading for these guys. So doesn't hurt the long-term investors as much, I don't think. But I think the biggest problem with quantifying stocks and quantifying, you know, investments and whatnot is that you don't look at the qualitative aspects at all, really. And I think the qualitative aspects are actually very important. And what differentiates, I think, a good investor and an average investor is not, you know, your ability to do arithmetic. Because, I mean, if you have a computer, you're the best at arithmetic. And it's not really your accounting, because you can hire all the accountants in the world. And, you know, you could still be losing money. But I think it is your ability to kind of, you know, see the important aspects that are qualitative that others don't really see. And so that way you have an edge where you can't really replicate it. You know, that edge can't be replicated. And I guess to some degree that's intuition. And it's also your ability to qualitatively value things. And computers are just not good at that. I mean, computers are much smarter than people in terms of math, numbers. They don't make these you know, addition, subtraction mistakes, but they can't really go into the qualitative aspect too deeply, whereas some humans can, most can't, but some can. And so the best humans should outperform computers. But computers will outperform most humans in this aspect, I guess, because computers are not emotional. Most humans are, and most investors are. And there's all these additional rules that computers will follow that some people aren't, I guess most people aren't disciplined enough to follow. So that's a big advantage that computers have, but they lose the advantage against the best people who can, you know, accurately, qualitatively value companies. And that brings me to the third biggest challenger of the active investor, which I guess is the whole machine learning and artificial intelligence. And this is kind of interesting, because if you teach a computer how to qualitatively value something, you know, then there are humans useless. And then the computer outperforms the human in every way. The human can't do anything against the computer. You have to implement like the human brain inside of a computer, give it curiosity. You have to give it creativity. You have to give it, you know, what the human brain has that computers don't. And that's the whole machine learning concept. Well, nowadays we're nowhere close to that yet, but you know, we're still approaching that. We have cars that are self-driving, and we're probably going to go deeper into that field, because that field, you know, I genuinely see a purpose, and I see how it could benefit consumers in many ways. Now, you have a lot of things that don't really benefit the consumers. At least not directly in the way that they would want to buy into it. But, you know, something like machine learning, I do see the way, you know, how it could help out each individual customer. Now, this is not something I'm familiar with either, but, you know, I think that the general idea is you also let computers study historical patterns, but instead of, you know, the quantitative investors who just throw in all these historical patterns, you let the computer study the patterns. And so, and implement solutions to historical problems using the solutions that were applied historically. And so, you know, for example, you have computers doing chess, And so if you wanted a chess player who is, you know, who would later become one of the best chess players, well, then this chess player has to study all of the moves that has been made by other professional chess players. And you just memorize basically every move at every position, every piece formation, if that makes any sense, given any situation. But of course, you know, humans, we can't remember everything and every move to make in every single situation, or every best move to make in every situation. We can't remember that. And apparently, you know, computers can remember anything, and they can. And so if they are able to do that, you know, computers are better than humans at chess. And you know, the best chess players, the top grandmasters, they still can't beat computers. Now, here's the difference between chess and real life investing. You know, they're actually quite similar, but the difference is that, you know, you could replicate a move on a chess. Well, here's the thing with chess. There are only a certain number of outcomes. Now, it's probably near and like, you know, there's so many possible outcomes, but there are only so many moves that you can make. Like basically, if you were to play every game differently, you had to move every piece in a different order or at a different place. Like, you can't play the same game the same time where you are moving the pieces at the same places at the same time. So you can move the pieces in a different place at the same time, or you can move the pieces in a different time at the same place. But the point is, you know, in chess, there are only a certain number of things that can happen. But in the real world, everything is changing, and there is no certain prediction of what, you know, what can happen and what can't happen. And so you can't make certain predictions with historical, you know, with what has happened historically. The point is, machine learning is probably going to be very helpful, especially in fields that can be replicated and that are constantly replicated. But in fields that are not replicated and where anything can happen, they are still less efficient than I think the best humans are. But, you know, the whole investing with machine learning and AI is still too early today. And so, at least in the short term, I don't think there's going to be anything crazy happening here. In the long term, a few decades ahead, that is a possibility. And I think it's going to probably take up more, a bigger fraction of the, you know, investment industry. Now, I think, you know, human investors are still necessary, but it's, you know, probably going to take in some of the jobs. And that is all for today. I don't think that human investing will be leaving too much anytime soon.